Hello, Juno. This is Juno Afternoon, and what a Juno Afternoon it is, both inside and outside. We've got a great show, so thank you for listening. We have Rabbi Dov Gartenberg to discuss Passover. We'll get a preview of Thursday's reading by Nora and Richard Downhauer at the Downtown Library. City Manager Kim Kiefer will join us by phone to update us on the CBJ activities, and we'll talk with Jason Smart about nominations for the Rasmussen Foundation's Distinguished Artist Award. That, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more. Thanks for joining us.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The state of Oklahoma and the Choctaw and Chickasaw nations have been negotiating for more than a year over who controls the water in the southeast part of the state. As Kurt Gortney with KGOU reports, both sides say they need more time to talk.
A joint statement from the two tribes and the state of Oklahoma asks for 90 more days from the federal court to negotiate an agreement. Chickasaw Governor Bill Anitubby and Choctaw Chief Gregory Pyle both say more time could lead to further progress. The federal mediator helping resolve the dispute for more than a year says his services are no longer needed. The Choctaw and Chickasaw nations sued Oklahoma in 2011 over control of water across 22 southeastern counties. The tribes say the 1830 Treaty of Dancing Rabbit Creek gives their governments control of the water, but Oklahoma officials have been setting water rights in the area since statehood in 1907. For National Native News, I'm Kurt Gortney in Oklahoma City.
A South Dakota legislative committee has advanced a bill to provide laptop computers to low-income families. The bill passed by one vote following opposition. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports.
State Representative Jacqueline Sly of Rapid City models her preschool program after an effort in Utah. In that state, 4- and 5-year-olds from lower-income families receive laptop computers and software from the state. Parents have to promise their children will spend at least 15 minutes a day working on reading, math, and science programs. Sly says the Utah program costs about $1,500 per child per year. Several opponents testified at the House Education Committee hearing. The executive director of the state Head Start Association, Kathy Cruz, says she supports expansion of preschool opportunities, especially when as many as 2,000 eligible South Dakota children aren't served because of funding issues. Cruz says she has a problem with children learning alone in front of a computer. Several other opponents said South Dakota's K-12 education system is very poorly funded. Money should go there first. Committee members voted to advance the bill on an 8-7 tally. It now goes to the Appropriations Committee without a specific dollar amount. Native Americans make up nearly 10% of South Dakota's population, and the state is home to some of the poorest reservations in the U.S. Many reservation families qualify for low-income education services. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellen Bolt.
Chippewa bands in Wisconsin are voicing concerns over controversial mining legislation. Leaders of the Red Cliff and Bad River tribes, along with city officials, scheduled a press conference today to voice opposition to the bill on mining regulations. Bad River Tribal Chairman Mike Wiggins has been a vocal critic. Opponents are raising concerns on possible environmental consequences. Movement is expected on the bill this week, which is expected to pass, and Wisconsin's governor backs the proposal. The National Congress of American Indians opposes the U.S. House version of the Violence Against Women Act. According to NCAI, the legislation released Friday lacks necessary protections for victims of violence and disregards tribal provisions approved in the Senate version. The organization says added provisions will interfere with tribal justice systems. Advocates, tribal leaders, and Native organizations supported the Senate version, which passed by wide margins. The Senate version includes new provisions to combat violence against Native women and allows tribal courts to prosecute non-Natives. Legislation to reauthorize the Violence Against Women Act has lingered in the House before. During this month in 2007, Chief Alinowick danced his last dance during the University of Illinois men's basketball game. The school's controversial mascot was dropped more than 2 years after being named hostile and abusive by the National Collegiate Athletic Association. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Every Alaskan can support causes and organizations they care about when they file for a permanent fund dividend. Use PIC-CLIC-GIVE when filing online for your PFD. When you select KNBA-FM, Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, you support National Native News. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Hello, Juno. This is Juno Afternoon, and I'm your Monday host, Joan Pardis. As we all know, it is a lovely afternoon out there, so I encourage everyone to take advantage of it because it looks like it's going to get cloudy this evening and snow likely in the morning and then rain and snow for the rest of the week. So if you have the opportunity, go out and revel in the best of Juno as you can, and hopefully the weather report is wrong. Here in the studio, I am sitting here with Rabbi Dov Gardenberg of Congregation Sukkot Shalom. Thank you, Rabbi, for joining us this afternoon.
Great to be here.
So something's cooking on Thursday. You want to tell me a little bit about what you're doing for lunch on Thursday?
Well, I was invited by the Church Cooperative Council to present at their Lenten Luncheon Series on Passover, which now is coming into consciousness because we just celebrated the holiday of Purim, Jewish holiday Purim, on Saturday, Sunday. And then we have a month to get ready for Passover. So this is the time when we begin to reflect and think about it and do all the things that it requires.
This Lenten Luncheon, where is it? And is it open to the public?
It's open to the public, I believe. And it's at Northern Lights Church
at noon.
And I know it's I was invited as a rabbi to speak about the Jewish tradition during this season. So it should be a nice occasion.
That sounds great. So tell us about Passover. Do you want to talk about the story or the importance?
Well, I'll start with the story. The Passover comes from the scriptures, from what we call the Torah. In the starts in the book of Exodus, and it tells the story of a people enslaved in Egypt and their redemption, and with a lot of drama. May have seen the movie, but this is the central story of Jewish tradition, in that the foundation of Jewish tradition is built around this and the giving of the Torah at Sinai, which is later in the book of Exodus. So we celebrate the first holiday, Passover, in springtime, and the holiday tied to the giving of the Torah is in the late spring with Shavuot.
Hmm. So if you observe Passover, what is the traditional way to observe Passover?
Well, it's what's really unique about Passover is that you have to prepare special foods, or you prepare your kitchen in such a way to be able to observe the Passover properly, according to tradition. So the main thing that you have to do, and this is why we have a month, when Purim ends, we're in a panic because now we know we have to really clean our houses. We have to get rid of all our leavening, anything with admixtures of leaven. It's called chametz. So it means a full spring cleaning of your whole house, actually, but the kitchen especially, and preparing to convert it into a kosher for Passover kitchen. This is for traditional Jews. This is a process of preparing your whole kitchen for observing and preparing the Passover meals. So the two main things, well, the main thing is that you're getting rid of the leaven, and then during the week of Passover, you're only eating unleavened bread and unleavened products.
And why is that?
Because when Israel went out of Egypt, it went in a very it went hastily and quickly, and the bread didn't have time to rise, and so they ate unleavened cakes. And part of our tradition is to remember that story by a week or eight days eating unleavened bread For that period.
Right. And Passover is also marked usually with a Seder on every evening or the first or second night?
Well, it depends on where you are. And in Israel, they only observe one day of Seder, the first night. And in the outside of Israel, the diaspora, we observe two nights of Seders. Seders are the most well-known part of Passover. Many people have participated who are not Jewish. But it's a ritual feast that celebrates the going out from Egypt, and very elaborate, very family centered, and with great food and great storytelling, and it's everyone looks forward to it. But the whole holiday is actually for outside of Israel is 8 days, with some festival days at the end. But the main action, at least most Jews know about, is the first two nights.
Right. And so you are the rabbi of community congregation Sukkot Shalom, and they host a community Passover Seder almost every year. Is that correct?
Yes, and the community is invited to come. It's Tuesday night, March 26th this year. And if you're interested in coming, it's led by one of our beloved members, Norman Cohen. He's done that for many years, and it's very, as you say in Yiddish, freilich, full of joy and fun, and a really wonderful celebration. And if you'd like to come, you can call the synagogue number or look in the website. You can there are links there to requesting reservations.
Right. And what is the number for the temple?
Oh, you know, offhand, I don't remember it.
So
but it's on, if you go to www.sukkatshalom, Alaska, S-U-K-K-A-T, Alaska, Sukkot, S-U-K-K-A-T, Shalom, S-H-A-L-O-M, Alaska.net.
Right.
You'll find the information you need.
Right. Or you could also search Congregation Sukkot Shalom Alaska.
On Google or Bing, or it'll get you there.
Your favorite search engine. Exactly.
Or you can go drive up to Cordova Street in West Juneau. And
this is open to the public. Everybody is welcome, correct?
Everyone is welcome.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Everybody is welcome to come and partake. And it's a fun activity. It's definitely, there's some reading, there's some singing, there's a lot of great food, and it is a very dynamic story.
It's a storytelling feast is the best way to describe it. People sit down with lots of symbolic foods, matzah being one of them, and there are others, and there's storytelling storytelling through song and through ritual action, and it's really a beloved tradition and wonderful to share.
Sounds great. So if you wanted to learn a little bit more about Passover, you could go on Thursday to Northern Lights Church to their Lenten Luncheon series, where Rabbi Dove will be talking about Passover. Or you can search Congregation Sukkot Shalom on the computer and send an email or give a call and say you'd like to join the festivities, and you are more than welcome to do so.
Absolutely.
Thank you for being here, Rabbi.
Thank you.
I don't know the Kiddush. Questions, questions all around. So many questions waiting to be found. The more you ask, the more you'll see. For every question, an answer there must be. When can I light the menorah? When can I read from the Torah? When can I get my own talis? When do we celebrate Shabbat?
three forefathers. And now back to our regularly scheduled song.
Hello, Juno. This is Juno Afternoon. You're listening on KTOO, and I'm your host, Joan Pardis. I am in the studio. It is an honor to be in the studio with Nora Donhauer and Richard Donhauer. Nora is Alaska's current writer laureate. Richard is the former poet laureate. They are both amazing, amazing artists in their own right, and it's a pleasure to have you both here. Welcome to the studio again, probably.
It's always good to be back here. Very, very stimulating conversation. Without fail.
Oh, that's great.
I hope we don't fail you guys today.
Well, I hope I live up to my the KTOO legacy. So Richard and Nora are both here to talk about Culture Days at the Library. And what this event is, or an ongoing event, it's sharing the region's rich culture through creative literature. The program is part of the Chilkat Valley Story Board and Tribal Government and is supported by a grant from the Institute of Museum and Library Services. So it's this Thursday, 6:30, at the Downtown Library. So what can people expect?
Well, that's a good question because I don't know myself. This whole thing that intrigues me is called OWL, O-W-L, I guess, like in the bird. So it's a hookup that's possible between or among libraries all over the state. So this is why the kind of strange to be a Haines operation happening downtown Juneau, but they can hook up with the libraries as far as Barrow. So I think Thursday we'll have Barrow on and Haines and other. And to me, that's exciting. So we'll be there for some questions and answers, and we'll read a few poems. And so we're as intrigued, I guess, as everybody else. I've never been to an OWL event. So
right. I remember perfectly now. So Carol Race was on the show a few weeks ago, and she was saying, so this is a wonderful opportunity for Junoites because we have you live, and it's going to be broadcast throughout the state. And I'm not sure if it's a live stream or exactly how. I think it is a live stream.
Yeah, I believe because we wanted to have two writers in town here, Ishmael Hope and Lance Twitchell, but Lance is in Hawaii, I believe. But I think Ishmael is out in one of the villages, and theoretically their library could link him up, and I think he could be live from there. So I think there's a lot of potential for having some nice hookups.
What a wonderful way to use technology for
sure.
Storytelling.
Oh, absolutely.
So you were the first couple to share this title, and Nora's the first Alaskan Native woman, and you were adopted into a clan, so it's just so terrific. The work that you've done throughout the state is just really amazing. And I think we get the honor to hear Nora read. Are you going to read something for us?
I would like to.
That would be wonderful.
Okay. How many?
Well, let's start with one. But yes,
okay.
Let's go from there.
Just a moment. Should I read differently?
Read whatever you like. That's a good one.
Okay. Gibberney on the Alsek. We used to go down on balloon boats.
Rafts.
And we'd raft down Alsek River from, I think it was Canada, wasn't it?
Well, you start north of Haines on the Haines.
Yeah. Right. And then we'd go down and end up in near Yakutat. It was beautiful. It was a beautiful trip. Anyway, journey on the Alsek. If Monet had seen the flowers at Alsek Peninsula, I bet he would have painted impressions of them. The landing beach alone, all covered with dwarf fireweed, going along the beach, downriver, wild asters, along the trail to Alsek Lake, more fireweed, profusion of Indian paintbrush in red and orange and yellow, pink pyrolus, purple larkspurs, grass of Parnassus, anemone, chocolate lilies, Jacob's ladder, strawberries. At Alsek Lake, more fireweed, dwarf around our sauna pond. I would love to see how Monet would have seen these against the Alsek Glacier, icebergs, and Mount Fairweather, capped with ice and sunlight.
That is beautiful. That is beautiful, and what wouldn't Monet do with that, with her amazing landscape?
I'm trying to make people realize we already have beautiful flowers.
It's true. I have crocuses in my yard, as we speak. When did you write that?
Geez, I can't remember.
Mm-hmm. Are you still writing? Are both of you still writing now?
Oh, yes.
Actively writing?
We're just not rafting anymore. It's harder to put up the pup tent every year.
I would imagine it's getting harder for me as well. Well, that is beautiful. So as Alaska Laureate, are you enjoying the honor and the title? Are you?
Well, it's really tiring. I just came back from Anchorage, a whirlwind of engagement here and there and there and there. It was really tough. Especially at my age, you know, I can't run that fast and stuff like that. Anyway, I made it.
We're happy you did, and we're happy that you'll be here on Thursday at the library at 6:30. If you have a chance, you definitely want to come down and see what's cooking at the library, Culture Days at the library with both Nora and Richard Donhauer.
Okay.
Looks like you want to read another. That would be fabulous.
Let me see. See if I can find it quickly.
So as Alaska Laureate, their tasks are to promote the reading, writing, and appreciation of the written word among the public, often through readings, workshops, conferences, and other functions. Would you say that's an apt description?
Yeah, and I think in general to promote literature and writing and the reading of it and the writing of it and all of that.
Seems like a fun job for a writer and a poet.
Yeah, in fact, while Nora is looking, and speaking of promoting literature, I got an email from Dick Stokes the other day, who has been involved with a poetry omnibus, and this is poetry on buses. In fact, Nora has a couple. Maybe she could read that. We're on buses and subways in the 12 largest cities in the country. We were getting people phoning in that we knew. We saw you in the bus, the Brooklyn buses and on the cable cars, and it was poetry for the advertising space and buses. So anyhow, we have that in Juneau. This is a contest for display of poems on Capital Transit, and there's adult and kids. Any topic, they just have to be short for the space there. So if you're interested in this at all, you can get Juno Arts and Humanities can give you the forms, or Poetry Omnibus at jahc.org. Also, the libraries have got that. So, and it's really fun. They're judged, and then they have a big party. This will be on May 1st for the winners. So if any of you out there are and usually these are people who ride buses, the way to get the ideas from. But I guess you'd presumably have to be a bus rider, but you could be published on the bus. So,
is there a deadline for that?
Yes.
It looks like April 1 is the deadline to submit your poem.
To submit the poem,
but
yeah.
To find out all the details of how one does that and what the criteria is, check it out at jahc.org. So, do you want to read your subway poem?
Yeah. First of all, I would like to say that I'm promoting writing. And I would like to see people write from their culture. You know, I did that with this poem I'm going to read. I would like to see Inupiaq kids if they have poems and stuff like that. Anyway, here's the poem. Repatriation. Repatriation is when the government gives back our artwork that's been in the museum. Anyway, this one is repatriation. For John Feller, a killer whale, you bent, entering the Chilkat robe. The hands of holders tremble. The robe ripples with its multiplying pods of killer whales. You dance to ancestors' song. The sea of killer whales splashes on your back. We can smell the sea laced with iodine on beaches at low tide.
Oh, that is beautiful. That is beautiful. Richard, are you going to read, or are you prompting?
I found the one that her poem that was in
on the bus.
On the bus, and this was a national.
A Street Fair Journal was the name of the. I mean, it sounds like a magazine, but Journal is the name of it. Street Fair Journal, but their publication format is buses in the 12 largest cities. That includes subways, cable cars, street buses, and. This was the one that they wanted, I can't remember if they wanted selected it from Nora's or whether she wrote it.
They made a poster of them.
So anyhow, this is it. One of my favorite poems of Nora's.
Granddaughter's dancing, blossoms swaying in the wind.
That is beautiful.
Thank you.
That is beautiful. So this omnibus, this poetry on transportation, public transportation, is obviously a program to make poetry and literature accessible to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's what you're doing, what you've done in the past, I'm pointing to Richard, and what Nora's current task is that literature and poetry is not something that's in a museum or in a book up high on the shelf. We're all living it in different degrees. Do you have any advice of all your years as writers and poets and all that you've done for the community and the culture of Southeast? Is there anything like little piece of advice that you want to share of like Nike distills it to just do it, and I'm not saying something remotely like that, but I know that you've met so many people in your official capacities as poet laureates, and I'm just wondering if there's anything that you want to say about that or to encourage people to pursue their art.
I think just to encourage people to notice things, and that's, I think, the whole heart of poetry is seeing something, and usually seeing it in a way that might not be noticed, and it can be things that might be overlooked. And I've enjoyed in the past doing poetry in schools because the kids have sometimes tremendous ability for simile and metaphor. And I remember what I was doing one at Fairbanks, and I said, "Well, you can." No, everybody wants to write poems about Pink Mount McKinley's, but nobody wants to write about their paper route or water going down a drain.
Their papa's boat.
So, yeah, the next day some kid brought in a poem about the kitchen sink and then the water going down the drain. I said, well, it certainly qualifies for looking at things that might be commonplace. and that's, I guess beyond that, it's awfully hard to say, you know, what's great now, what's going to be great, I mean, who's going to be great in their lifetime or afterward, and there's a whole range of poetry, and not everybody likes everything, and I've mentioned, you know, like Wendell Berry seems to have a thing with Dryden and Spenser. He just loves them. And I've asked him at readings, I can't stand those guys. I mean, I keep going back to Dryden, and 12 lines, I'm falling asleep. It just does not do anything for me. So I think that people don't have to feel guilty because they have trouble with certain writers, and then others you may have a lover's quarrel with. You know, but it's really hard to beat Shakespeare. I mean, you read some of those sonnets and say, wow. I mean, not anybody's going to probably crank out one of those today, but they're powerful. And I have also been attracted as a translator to poets throughout the generations, from classical Greek right on through to Rilke, Pasternak. So it's always interesting what other languages and literatures consider their favorites, so that's, I guess, my message there.
And if you are just joining us, this is Juno Afternoon on KTOO. My name is Joan Partis. I'm in the studio with Nora and Richard Donhauer. They are part of Culture Days at the Library, February 28th, this Thursday at 6:30. They will be doing a program live in Juno that's going to be streamed throughout the state. By all means, I encourage you to come and take advantage of this opportunity. Nora is the current laureate for the state, and Richard is a former poet laureate. And to close, can we have one more poem? Yes, yes, Nora's hands up.
My last one.
I will call on you. Yes, Nora, you may read.
You know, when we wear our bracelets, we never take them off. Could be gold, could be silver.
Mm-hmm.
Wealth. For all single women who slice fish for the smokehouse, slime squishing through gold and silver bracelets, women slicing salmon.
Yeah, that is beautiful. And what a picture, what a clear picture that is. Mm-hmm. So poetry, it could be 2 lines, it could be 4 lines, it could be 6 lines, it could be 8 pages.
Mm-hmm.
It's all different shapes and sizes. Thank you so much for being here, and thank you for all that you do. February 28th. This Thursday, 6:30 at the library. See you there.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 25th of February, 2013. It's the birthday of Anthony Burgess, born in Manchester, England, 1917. Majored in English literature, joined the army. He was good at languages. He moved ahead in military intelligence, got a job with the British Colonial Service. He was posted to Malaysia, became fluent in Malaysian, taught in a boys' school, wrote novels for pleasure on the side, went off to a teaching post in Borneo, started to get headaches, and then one day collapsed in front of the classroom. He was flown back to London, where doctors said he had a brain tumor, inoperable. He had 1 year to live, and he didn't have a job. He had no money to spend that terminal year traveling, so he started out to make money for his widow and wrote at a furious pace, wrote 5 novels in 1 year, and it turned out he did not have a brain tumor, and he did not die. Kept writing at a furious pace, outlived his wife by many years, eventually died of lung cancer in 1993, 30 books and 30 years later. Wrote his most famous book, A Clockwork Orange, in just 3 weeks in 1962, which was inspired by a tragic experience of his and his wife's. Soon after he was married, when his wife was pregnant, she was mugged by 4 young American Army deserters in London and afterward miscarried their child. A Clockwork Orange, set in future England, featuring a teenage anti-hero, Alex, who leads his gang of friends on acts of random violence, but in the end grows up and realizes that violence is a bore, and he wants to marry and have a child. That last chapter was cut off the American edition of A Clockwork Orange, and also left off the movie by Stanley Kubrick, which irritated Anthony Burgess. the fact that the novel and the film seemed to glorify sex and violence and had left off the chapter about maturity and redemption. Here's a poem for today by Paul Hastowski, entitled Trombone Lesson. The 20 minutes from 9:30 to 10:50 is actually slightly longer than the 20 minutes from 9:50 to 10:10, which is half downhill, as anyone who's ever stared at the hillocky face of a clock in the fifth grade will tell you. My trombone lesson with Mr. Lester was out the classroom door and down the tessellating hallway to the band room, which was full of empty chairs and music stands, from 9:50 to 10:40, which is half an hour, and was actually slightly shorter than the 20 minutes that came before or after, which, as anyone who's ever played trombone will tell you, had to do with the length of the slide and the smell of the brass and also the mechanism of the spit valve and the way that Mr. Lester accompanied me on his silver trumpet, making the music sound so elegantly and eminently better than when I practiced it at home for hours and hours, which were all much shorter than an hour, actually, as anyone who's ever practiced the art of deception with a musical instrument will tell you, if he's honest and has any inkling of the spluttering, sliding, flaring, slippery nature of time, youth, and trombones. Paul Hastowski's poem Trombone Lesson from Bending the Notes, published by Main Street Rag Publishing Company and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Reputation.com, whose Reputation Defender service is designed to help businesses and professionals improve their search results. Learn more at Reputation.com. Produced by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO. I'm your Monday host, Joan Pardis. So that was the poetry segment of our show, and it was terrific. Richard and Nora Donhauer in the studio. They will be at the library on Thursday at 6:30. Here in the studio right now is Kim Kiefer of the City and Borough of Juneau. Good afternoon, Kim.
Good afternoon.
It's a great afternoon
out
there.
It is beautiful out there.
It is really lovely. But the Juneau Assembly will not be able to enjoy the pleasant evening because they have a committee of the whole tonight, and they are going to be talking about the Ad Hoc Housing Committee has arranged for a presentation from local lenders. What can we expect to hear at that presentation?
The lenders have been meeting for the last 2 months, is my understanding, to come up with recommendations for the Assembly about how to address housing here. So let me take a couple of steps back on how we got to this place. One of the goals the Assembly had was to address housing in Juneau. And so they thought, you know what, we need to hear from the lenders, we need to hear from the realtors, we need to hear from the landowners, and we need to hear from the builders. So they broke up those four groups and said, okay, can you all talk amongst yourself and then come back with recommendations to us? And so this is the second presentation. The first one was the landowners. They had a number of recommendations, and so now we have the lenders saying, here are things we think you can do with changes of code, maybe put on some staff to help people through the process. They have a variety of different recommendations that they are bringing forward. And basically, the question that the Assembly asked was, what are the challenges for you in providing housing within all price ranges and throughout the community? So they wanted to make it really clear that it's not just low-income housing or high-income housing. It's housing in general throughout the whole community. And then what strategies can the Assembly employ to alleviate the situation? the other important thing for the community to know is, yes, they asked these four groups, but they want to hear from everybody. So if anybody has a recommendation, they want to hear from people about their own individual experience, what they have gone through and what they think could make it better. Whatever their suggestions are, the Assembly wants to hear from you. So please don't think that if you don't fit into those four groups that they don't want to hear from you. They want to hear from everybody.
How does one share what their opinions or their comments?
So what you can do is go to juno.org, go to the Assembly webpage, and there's a link on there that you can click to tell all the borough assembly. You can click on that and send it to them electronically. You can send it to them by sending a letter, and we'll make sure it gets to the committee and get to the full assembly. And you can come and talk at any assembly meeting to give your ideas as well. But trying to focus it as much as we can on the written so that we can put that information out to everybody.
Okay, and to clarify, is this for homeowners only, or is this for anyone who needs a place to live? I mean, it's not like, oh, you have to own a house to join this conversation.
Oh, no, it's not about home ownership. It's not about rental. It's about what do you think the issues are in the community. So what are the things the city and borough, the city government can do to help increase housing in this community? So there's been a number of changes that have happened with zoning. There's been and sewer that's been extended to a number of different locations that allowed then the zoning to be increased. And so what we're not seeing, though, is the development then that's following that. So we're trying to figure out, okay, we've done some pieces. Are there more things that we can do? Do people not understand the pieces that we've done, which leads really into the housing forum that's coming up on the 27th? The city and borough is hosting a free housing forum on the 27th. It runs from 9:30 to 2:30. And you need to. It would be good to register ahead of time, and you can do that by calling Jesse Beck at 586-0224. And this is geared towards builders, realtors, anybody that's developing. And what the couple-hour session will be is to talk about the changes that have happened, changes in code, changes in zoning that people may not be aware of. And it also is a really good thing for people that need to earn their technology continuing education credits. You can get 5 credits for this towards the residential contractor endorsement. So it's an opportunity to both learn about future development as well as getting the CEUs that you may need. Or if you're just interested in building a house, it's a great thing to be able to come and learn the new things. What's the density? What changes have been made? How to walk through the process? And there will be community development staff there that will help you to answer your questions and help you walk through that process.
That sounds great. And that's out at UAS, right?
Correct. It's University.
Right. So it's at UAS. It's on Wednesday, the 27th, from 9:30 to 2:30. I'm assuming it's free.
It's free.
It's free.
It is.
And it's...
And lunch is included.
Oh, that's great. Free lunch as well. And then there's a wide variety of as far as target audiences, you're looking for...
Everybody that has anything to do with housing.
That sounds great.
Yeah,
that sounds great. And is it? Does it have a theme? Does it have breakout sessions? Is it just the whole?
There's not breakout sessions. They've got a schedule for the day to cover different things. So they'll look at the zoning piece of it. They'll look at the data that says here's the kind of housing that we need to have in Juneau based on the study that was done 2 years ago and then updated just recently about what's the demand out there. Mm-hmm. So it will look at a variety of different things.
If people wanted more information to decide whether or not to take the day off or invest their time in that, where can they find more information? Like, we have a flyer here, but where can somebody find this?
So if you go to juno.org, I believe it's on the lands link. And if it isn't, I'll try and make sure it gets there this afternoon.
Well, you could also call...
And you can also call Jesse Beck at 586-0224. Or you can email her at jesse_beck@ci.juno.ak.us.
That sounds great. Okay, so tonight there's this ad hoc housing committee. There's going to be presentations about local lenders about basically the future of housing in Juneau.
It's what they would suggest or recommendations to change to be able to allow more housing to happen here.
And what is the assembly and the city staff going to do with the information that they get tonight?
We're going to collect it. We're waiting to get the other two committee reports back, so we still need to hear from the realtors and we still need to hear from the developers. Then we'll look at all that information together, take it back to the assembly and say, okay, what are some of the things, what are things that touch city government? What can we do? And in the first group, I think it's really important to point out, said, we know we didn't get here overnight. It's going to take time to get out of this. Juneau's always had a hard time with housing. I remember in the 70s it was word of mouth. Nothing ever hit any kind of media to get housing. You had to talk to somebody who talked to somebody who talked to somebody to get something. And so we know we need to take some time to get out of this, and we want to be strategic on how we move forward. And the Assembly wants to look at all those ideas and say, okay, what can we do right now that will try and have an impact for housing? Probably not for the summer at this point, but for something that could actually take place for next year.
Right. So it sounds like an ongoing process. And as it seems to me that you're really encouraging feedback to be part of the process, get in touch with your assembly. You could just search for Juneau CBJ online, and mm-hmm. you'll be directed to the assembly. By all means, if you have something to say, take it out of the dinner table and share it with the people who could actually do something. So that's the way to get things done. So I'm definitely hearing encouragement here to join the conversation.
Yeah, it's not limited. It's open to everybody. If you have ideas that you think will help the housing crunch that we have in this community, we want to hear from you.
That sounds great. Well, thank you for joining us. Is there anything else you'd like to say?
Not around housing, but I have one other thing that I just want to remind people about is there's a number of appeals that the Assembly is dealing with right now. And so, and there are appeals that have come from Planning Commission decisions. And those appeals, the Assembly cannot talk about them once it's been appealed to them. So they can't read emails about it. They can't receive or respond to any emails about it. They can't even be in a room when it's being talked about. So if people are sending emails to the Assembly, they can't respond to you and they can't read them. So it's strict rules of what they can and cannot do at this point. So I just want to remind the community that this isn't a time to tell your assembly members what they think about appeals, because it's past that place.
Okay.
Unlike the housing, where we want all the comments we can get.
Okay. Well, Kim, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. A flash of glittering dark blue cuts through the gray of late February as a male tree swallow glides low over a cattail marsh. The tree swallow's liquid notes hint at spring's approach. Where a broad green pasture meets the forest edge, there is a second, even brighter flash of blue. A male bluebird alights on a fence post. The intense blue of its back glints in the welcome sunlight of late winter. Tree swallows, and all three North American bluebird species, are among the earliest northbound migrants to arrive, heralding spring a month before the equinox. Both species will nest only in cavities, such as old woodpecker holes or man-made nest boxes. The supply of such specialized nest sites is limited. Competition is intense. By arriving so early, tree swallows and bluebirds improve their chances of finding unoccupied cavities, and they may fiercely guard a nest site until April, before actually nesting. Both species benefit greatly from nest box programs, but it's crucial to put up only nest boxes with very specific hole sizes that encourage these flashy blue migrants, but deter non-native starlings and house sparrows. To learn about how to provide just the right home for tree swallows and bluebirds, come to our website, birdnote.org.
Support comes from Alaska Communications, now offering broadband and wireless solutions designed to help small businesses. Because Alaska Communications believes that small businesses deserve to have the same tools as big businesses. AlaskaCommunications.com. The Juneau World Affairs Council presents the Japan-Alaska Relationship and Hopes for the Future by Japanese Consulate Koichi Funayama, Tuesday, February 26th at 5 p.m. in the KTOO TV studios. Koichi is a career diplomat that has worked for the Ministry of Foreign Affairs for over 30 years. This event made possible from support with Greens Creek, Sea Alaska, GCI, Kensington, and Wassman & Associates. That's Tuesday, February 26th, 5 p.m. at K2. JWAC, bringing the world to Juneau.
The Juneau Symphony is proud to present the Symphony Showcase, sponsored by Alaska Airlines and UAS. Take a time out from your busy schedule and relax and enjoy delicate duets, soaring strings, and a blast from the brass section at this annual chamber music event. Performances will be Saturday, March 2nd in the UAS Egan Library and a Sunday matinee on March 3rd at Northern Light United Church. Tickets are on sale now. More information at www.junosymphony.org. We'll see you at the Symphony.
Hello, Juneau. This is Juneau Afternoon. I'm your host, Joan Pardis. You're listening on KTOO. By phone, we're going to be talking to Jason Smart from Rasmussen Foundation about the Distinguished Artist Award. Jason, are you on the line?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, Jason. How are you?
Doing just great. Thank you.
Great. So tell us about this Distinguished Artist Award.
Well, this award is part of a program we called our Individual Artist Awards program, and which consists of three different kinds of awards. And the Distinguished Artist Award specifically is what we think of as our hallmark or special award that recognizes a single artist within the state of Alaska each year and provides a grant of $40,000 for an individual who's had and made a significant contribution to the arts and cultural life in Alaska.
That sounds terrific. When is the deadline for to submit an application?
So this Friday, March the 1st, is our deadline for applications. And in the case of the Distinguished Artist Award Program, we actually invite nominations from any individual in the general public to forward or nominate artists they believe have made a significant contribution within the state. And they can submit those nominations either through our website, through a simple online nomination entry, or can submit that through accessing documents on our website. And they can fax that information in or send it to the foundation again by this Friday, March the 1st.
Right. And I did a little research, and did I get the criteria right that the person would have a body of work spanning 15 years? Is that part of it?
That's what we indicate in the guidelines for our program, and that we're really looking to individuals that have had, in most cases, those that have been recognized in the program in the past have had a lifelong exploration of work as an artist. But we do indicate that as a good measure of at least a minimum of 15 years of work in the state.
Right. And who, do you have some of the names of the past recipients of this award?
Sure. Over the past couple of years, last year's recipient was Kess Woodward from Fairbanks. And prior to that, Ray Troll from Ketchikan. And John Luther Adams, a music composer from Fairbanks the previous year. Our first recipient in the program back in 2004 was Sylvester Ayack. And the other recipients have included John Haynes, a writer from Fairbanks, who's since passed about a year and a half ago. And then, of course, Dolores Churchill. And from Juneau, Ree Munoz received this award back in 2007. And finally, Ron Zanungatuk and Nathan Jackson are also recipients.
Great. So all different genres of art.
Absolutely. Yep. We encourage nominations from about artists that work really in any discipline. And yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then with the $40,000 award, is what's the responsibility to be the recipient? So let's say like Nora Donhauer was in the studio just a little while ago. If I leave and I say, I'm going to nominate Nora because I think she's amazing, and then through the process she becomes the recipient, what does that mean to the recipient?
Well, really, we leave this very wide open, and it's truly is an award that is in recognition of the accomplishments of the artist over their career. And so we don't have any real restrictions on how they use those funds. So we hope that the funding support will support them in their continued work as an artist, and you know, if there's the potential of them exploring some new project or doing some new thing that they wanted to accomplish, we certainly encourage that. So no real restrictions in the use of the funds. And as an example, I know in talking not too long ago with Kes Woodward from Fairbanks that he actually used a portion of his funds to help build a new studio space. That's quite spectacular and something that he'd wanted to get done for a good period of time. So, but we know that these artists will utilize their funding support in a broad range of ways. And the only thing that we do ask is that they just stay in touch with us. We technically make this grant over a one-year period, and at the end of that 1 year, we ask them to send us a brief note back and just say, you know, what happened over that course of time and how were they able to use the support.
Sounds great. So if you're just joining us, I'm talking with Jason Smart from the Rasmussen Foundation. The Distinguished Artist Award deadline is March 1, and you can nominate the artist of your choice, hopefully with a body of work roughly around 15 years. And what's the website where people should go to find out more about the process, whether they want to nominate themselves or nominate an artist?
You bet. So if you just come to our main homepage at the Rasmussen Foundation, that is www.rasmussen, and that's spelled RASMUSON.org.
Sounds great. And are there other deadlines? I know you have a variety of different awards and grants and many, many programs, but are there any other upcoming deadlines besides the Distinguished Artist Award deadline?
Well, as I mentioned it as we began to start talking, just to, so if folks are listening and curious about our Artist Awards program, in addition to the Distinguished Artist Award, we have what we call Project Awards and Fellowship Awards. And we have the same deadline for those two programs, which is this Friday, March the 1st. And those two programs actually require an application from artists who are interested in seeking funding. So it's a little different than this Distinguished Artist Award, which is done on a nomination basis, but this deadline of this Friday, March the 1st, applies in all those cases.
Right. So if you're interested in one of those awards that requires an application, unless you're a really quick study, you maybe want to put it in your hat for next year.
That's right. That is a very good point, because it does take a little time to plan and put the application materials together, but yes, indeed.
But to nominate your favorite artist for Distinguished Artist from any genre, you can certainly go to the website and do that by March 1. That sounds like a two-minute little show.
You know, it's a brief. Yep.
Sounds great. Jason, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having us on your program.
All righty, and thanks for all you do.
Okay, take care now.
Okay.
The Juno Photo Group is a diverse assemblage of local enthusiasts, professional and amateur, who share a love of photography. Every day of the year, JPG members are out and about, rain or shine, taking photos of Juno and elsewhere. During the March 1st Friday event, JPG members will have a double exposure show with photo exhibits in two locations, the KTOO Studios from 4:30 to 6 o'clock and at 228 Seward Street from 4:30 to 7 o'clock. Light refreshments will be provided at both venues. Photos at KTOO will be available for viewing the entire month of March.
In the last concert of the season, Gold Street Music will feature Jim Noel, Shona Strasser, Riley Woodford, and Mike Moss, Mary DeSmet and Greg Berger, Joe Emerson, and Robert Cohen. This will be at Resurrection Lutheran Church at 10th and Glacier, downtown, on Saturday night, March 2nd at 7:30. Tickets will be available at the door. I hope you join us.
Hello, Juno. This is Juno Afternoon. You're listening on KTOO. I'm your Monday host, Joan Pardis. We had a very lovely show today. The highlight for me was Nora and Richard Donhauer. They'll be at the library this Thursday at 6:30. The Rasmussen Foundation was talking about their Distinguished Artist Award. Their deadline is March 1, and that's just a nomination at their website. Other news about the literary arts is February's Mudroom, which was took place earlier this month, will air at KTOO tonight at 7. There will be stories by Allison Hotkamp, Becca van de Water, Jeff Kirsch, Sarah Ginter, Marion Call, and Steve Davis. That definitely seems like something you want to tune into. And then the Poetry Omnibus contest is happening. The deadline is April 1. To find out more about how to submit a poem, that will be at jahc.org, Juno Arts and Humanities Council. As for weather, it is lovely now. It's going to get cloudy tonight. And the rest of the week, it will be rain and snow. Tomorrow on Juno Afternoon, Pat Moore hosts, and he'll be talking about the planetarium presentation. He'll be talking with Colleen McKenzie about Aware. She was nominated as one of Aware's Women of Distinctions. Representative from the Juno World Affairs Council will be in as well. And Patrick Murphy will be talking about the Gastineau Elementary's music program.
Oil giant BP has its day in court. Opening arguments begin in a civil trial over the company's role in the lead-up to the Deepwater Horizon oil spill. Did the company put profit ahead of safety and the environment? It's Monday, February 25th, and this is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Audie Cornish. Coming up, billions of dollars are at stake for BP. Later, the nation's governors wrap up their conference. One of the pressing issues, the future of Medicaid.
The one consistent theme, though, is Medicaid is a real central issue on the minds of just about every governor. It's in most states growing faster than state revenue.
A new online project to prevent political violence in Kenya.
Within 15 minutes of us receiving that SMS, two...